Happy Halloween from Word Balloon, the counterculture conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, a great seasonal chat with Hellboy's real dad, artist-writer Mike Mignola, who sets the table for the Big Red Guy's animated debut in the Film Roman production Hellboy, Sword of Storms, premiering October 28th on the Cartoon Network. The DVD release is expected in February. Mike co-wrote the animated feature with director Tad Stones. In this new era of the marriage between Hollywood and comic books, the horror-inspired character Hellboy fits quite nicely with the X-Men, the Spider-Men, and the Batmans as far as box office success. Mignola has expanded the Hellboy universe, focusing on the other agents of the BPRD investigative agency. Mike also talks about Hellboy's beginnings, the upcoming new miniseries with Duncan Fregretto, an Abe Sapien miniseries, more PPRD, and the pulp-inspired hero Lobster Johnson. You'll also hear about Mike's art influences, collaborating with artists like Guy Davis, Richard Corbin, and filmmaker Guillermo del Toro. Speaking of del Toro, you'll also hear a lengthy tease about Hellboy 2, which has just begun pre-production. I'll start by asking about the new animated film, Sword of Storms. I heard you, Tad, and Phil just finished the DVD commentary?
Yes.
On Friday?
Right.
You had seen half of the film, the second half, before the commentary, but from what Tad was saying on his blog, the first time you did see the first half was during the commentary.
Right. Tad was actually very nervous because I kept telling him, I don't want to watch the movie until I do the commentary, so on tape you'll get my first reaction. And Tad knows what a hard time I have, seeing Hellboy interpreted by other people. So I think he was expecting me to bolt out of the room, but I didn't. I stayed in my chair, so it went pretty well.
The stills look fantastic, and it's cool that Ron Perlman is back and Selma Blair is back, correct?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, at this point, I don't know how we would have done Hellboy without Ron's voice. So, it worked real well.
Has the character changed in your mind when you draw him and write him, and do you hear Ron's voice now?
No, I still, when I sit down and work on the comic, it's still what it always was. So all other things, Hellboy, film, animation, all the other stuff, is still filed in a separate category. But if I'm in a position where, we're working a medium where Hellboy actually has to speak, he needs a voice, Ron's the only voice I can think of. But as far as when I'm doing the comic, I don't hear Ron's voice.
Okay. Was there ever any actor or type of voice? I know you've said that Hellboy's a combination of yourself and your father.
Right.
And is your father's voice part of the character, or?
I never really thought about that. The character, there is a, I guess I could have heard my father doing Hellboy. I knew it was a tough, gravelly kind of a voice, not a booming, demon, spooky voice, but it was a working man voice. Mm-hmm. Not my own voice, but it was a much gravelier kind of a two packs of cigarettes a day kind of voice. So that probably comes from my father.
This is a very blue-collar hero, and it's interesting that I wonder about the archetypes that you maybe drew upon from a heroic standpoint, because you've talked about how you're really not a superhero guy.
Yeah, it was never my intention to do a superhero book. The character's red, so that makes it kind of superhero-ish. quite frankly, I would have done, because I knew what the kinds of stories I wanted to do, at the very beginning, I would have made Hellboy just a regular guy. I would have made it just a guy who investigates supernatural stuff, except I knew I'd get bored drawing a regular person. So I created the look of Hellboy entirely so I'd have fun drawing it. That little bit of origin that showed up in the first Hellboy comic just seemed like a fun intro to the character. But it was never my intention when I sat down to do this thing to, create the character I created. It just kind of grew as things went along.
Back to the movie, Sword of Storms, the first animated film. There's a second one coming out as well.
Yeah.
This first one, it debuts October 28th on Cartoon Network. I'm curious, is this an original story, or is this based on one of the comic books?
It is about 78-92%, something like that, original.
Okay.
The only thing from the comics, there's a little short story about Hellboy in Japan called Head that's in one of the short story collections. That story appears as a chapter in Sword of Storms. when Tad and I first started talking about this film, we knew we wanted to make it distinctly different than the first Hellboy film. So, you know, and I didn't really want to write off just repeat something I'd done in the comic. So I said, well, Japan's got so much great folklore. And I've only done this one little story about Hellboy in Japan. Why don't we do Hellboy in Japan? Because I wasn't planning to do more stuff in the comic about Japan. I found Japan very difficult to draw. I love the creatures, but for me as an artist, I know nothing about Japan.
Okay.
So I thought, well, why, you know, I'll let you guys, you know, do the research and figure out the architecture and all that stuff, and let you guys do Japan. It just, I just thought it would be cool, it would be different, and you know, that's what I wanted. I didn't want people to see it and just go, oh yeah, it's kind of like the movie, it's kind of like this, it's kind of like that. I want something original. And when Guillermo and I were talking, God, was this back when we were still filming the first Hellboy film, he mentioned to me one day that, you know, maybe for the sequel to the live-action film, we would do Hellboy in Japan. And he had this image of Hellboy walking across this field with a samurai sword, which immediately that image stuck in my mind as being a very cool image.
You bet.
So, you know, the Hellboy 2, you know, idea went in a different direction. So you know, that was also in my head when I thought, that's a good one. Let's do that. Let's start off with that.
Are film Roman's animators based in Japan or Korea? I mean, where are
they? I don't know. It's somewhere overseas is where the animation was done. I'm not exactly sure which country, but somewhere over there. Now, again, all the design stuff was done, you know, all that stuff was done in-house at Film Roman, but the actual animation was done over there.
How many of those guys were Mignola fans and had read the book?
I get the impression quite a few were. Yeah, I only met those guys once, but I was very impressed with the level of work they were doing. I mean, I had worked on a picture at Disney years ago,
mm-hmm.
and walking into Film Roman, which obviously they're doing stuff for a lot less money and they're doing it a lot faster. But when I walked around the room, it reminded me very much of working on a picture at Disney. There was so much thought and so much, you know, design work going into these films. I was very impressed.
Have you seen the second film as well?
No, I haven't seen. I haven't seen anything from the second film.
Okay. Are they still putting it together?
Yeah. It's not done yet.
Okay. What did you think, speaking of animation, of the Sci-Fi Channel's version of The Amazing Screw-On Head?
Well, that's one of the things I never watched. It's very difficult for me to watch my work interpreted in a way. Screw-On Head was very much, they're trying to capture my style.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult for me to watch other people doing my style because it's so glaring to me when it's not what I would have done. It's much easier to look at the live action Hellboy film because it's so radically different than what I do. It's live action. So but when I'm watching Hellboy or some other character like Screw-On Head drawn, and especially if it's trying to look like me, then it's just a very weird experience to me. And I think I saw about 4 seconds of Screw-On Head and bolted out of the room. Not that it's bad, and every, you know, people whose opinion I really respect really like it. So apparently they did a great job. It's just so close to what I did that, you know, it was just weird to me. So
it just hits home.
Yeah, it's just hard to look at.
Okay.
And also, I mean, early on with Screw-On Head, you know, I had conversations with the writer. I had conversations with various studio people. And they really wanted to change it from what I originally did, which is fine. But if they were going to change it, my feeling was, you know, I did it my way. You guys go and do what you're going to do.
And as far as more work with Film Roman, you know, you're set with these two films. Are there plans for more if success, you know, demands more features from you guys?
There's certainly been discussion, and Tad and I have talked about what we would do for a third film. You know, I guess we'll just wait and see.
You mentioned Del Toro, and I know that you're in the midst of pre-production for Hellboy 2.
Right.
Without spoiling anything, what can you tell us about Hellboy 2?
Hellboy 2 is radically different than the first one, in that the first one covered, you know, the Nazi mad scientist stuff and Rasputin and the sort of H.P. Lovecraft-inspired creature stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This one is the other half of what I put into Hellboy, which is the mythology and the folklore. So this one deals with, I hate to say elves and fairies, but that's kind of what it is. We're dealing with these ancient earth spirit kind of characters that have been kind of shoved, you know, into the forest. And as the forest gets cut down, these guys go underground. And basically they're being kind of pushed out. It's very, I look at it very much like the whole, you know, white man settling America and you know, pushing the American Indians further and further into a corner. And that Geronimo kind of character saying, why don't we just go kill them all? Instead of go to the reservation, well, I got an idea. Let's go kill everybody and make the world ours again. So we're dealing with that kind of idea of these characters who used to rule the world. And instead of going quietly, at least one or two of them are saying, or we could just kill everybody.
The BPRD was a big part of the first Hellboy film,
yeah.
And obviously establishing the whole universe of Hellboy.
Right.
Are they back for this film as well?
Yeah. It's very much the same cast. We actually introduce another BPRD character from the comic that we haven't seen in the films before. But it's got very much the same feel of the first film in that, you know, you do have the BPRD and you have the Hellboy-Liz Sherman relationship and all that kind of stuff. All that stuff is there. It's moving forward. All the relationship stuff is moving forward. But the menace that they're confronting is different.
Okay. You mentioned mythology, which is such a big part of a lot of your stories, and it's great that you really go around the world and attach Hellboy to all these different legends. Are there mythologies you haven't even scratched the surface of that you're kind of chomping at? You always say you have so many story ideas kind of percolating as time goes on.
Right. I've done a lot of little English folklore stories,
mm-hmm.
but what we're working on in the comics right now is my big folklore epic. So the one that Duncan Gregorio is drawing right now, which it covers a lot of Russian mythology and it covers a lot of English stuff. I don't want to get into anything real specific because it goes in a very interesting direction. But, I knew the folklore stuff was appealing to me more than the mad scientist kind of stuff and the Nazi kind of stuff. So when I took Hellboy out of the BPRD and gave the BPRD their own book, I knew I was going a particular direction with Hellboy, which was much more in the folklore mythology kind of, you know, and ghost stuff, spooky supernatural kind of stuff. I wanted to do that and kind of leave the mad scientist, H.P. Lovecraft kind of stuff behind.
With BPRD, it's great that it has kind of spun off into its own series because these are really interesting, deep characters as well. I mean, there are tons of Abe Sapien fans and Liz as well and all the other agents. And you said that you kind of have trouble watching other people work, you know, on some of your ideas. Does that also follow through with some of the other comic creators who have written and drawn your characters?
It takes some getting used to. BPRD was actually a very easy transition because the artist was so unlike me. And Guy Davis is a fantastic artist.
You bet.
So I knew I wanted him because he was a great creature guy. So BPRD also, I had done what I was going to do with those characters. So turning it over to somebody else, that was pretty easy. And it was a real joy writing that book for Guy Davis. And then co-plotting with somebody else, with John Arcudi that I'm doing now, it's a real fun book, and I'm just thrilled doing it. It was much trickier finding an artist to continue Hellboy, because Hellboy is so much my character. And the stories that we're doing in Hellboy, unlike BPRD, these are stories that I've been planning for the last 10 years. So there's always an element of, ooh, I always intended to draw this stuff myself, but I'm handing it over to somebody else. So some of that stuff is a little bit trickier, but again, I got very lucky. And the Duncan Vigredo is fantastic. Unlike BPRD, where I thought it would be great to get an artist who drew nothing like me. For Hellboy, because the style is so much a part of Hellboy, I knew I needed an artist who had a similar sensibility as far as spotting blacks and things like that.
Okay.
But I didn't want somebody who was an imitator of me.
Sure.
So Duncan and I, we do some things very similar. We do some things radically different. And it's working great. And I think as he gets more comfortable, it's just getting better and better. So, I'm happy. And I'm happy it's getting done. Because I've gotten so slow, the alternative is to get no comics. So the fact that I've got, Duncan drawing Hellboy, Guy drawing BPRD, I'm also writing an Abe Sapien miniseries right now that's going to be drawn by another really extraordinary artist named Jason Alexander.
Oh, Jason's great. That's awesome.
So he's doing that, and then we're talking hopefully very soon about doing a Lobster Johnson miniseries.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm actually having a really good time writing this stuff and doing the covers and letting, other guys do the heavy lifting.
I vote for more Lobster Johnson. I'm glad you mentioned it because he's a tremendous character.
I've been wanting to do that for years. It's just a matter of, again, finding the right artist for it.
Who are some of your pulp influences? I know that obviously you're a Lovecraftian guy, and I've seen you mention that you, as a kid, you loved Dracula. But as far as heroic pulp, who are some of your guys?
Well, I read, when I was in high school, the one I read was Doc Savage.
Sure.
But more recently, and as in like the last 10 years, I discovered The Spider, which I didn't pick up when I was a kid. And The Spider is probably the biggest influence on Lobster Johnson. So it's not really even the specific characters. It's the mindset that was in that whole pulp movement. There's mm-hmm. just something so sincere about those old-fashioned kind of characters. I love The Shadow, even though I've never read him. I love The Spider, even though I've only read two or three books. I just love the idea of these guys. It's just a great era, and I just thought if I'm going to have a superhero kind of character in Hellboy, I want to set him in that time period as opposed to having any kind of a modern superhero because, I just am not interested in superheroes after 1965.
Well, and it seems like guys of our era were the last generation that, got a chance to really get into the pulps because it's funny, I read that Condé Nast has just kind of revised the licensing of Doc Savage and The Shadow, for example. And it's like, God, where have you been the last 20 years? I think there's a whole generation of fans that really didn't get an opportunity to kind of, sink into those characters unless they saw the Alec Baldwin movie in the case of The Shadow or, even that Ron Eli movie, I guess.
Didn't do The Shadow any favors. it's interesting because I have had a lot of people respond to Lobster Johnson. And there have been several other people I know doing comics or films that have a nod to those those days. So, I don't know how well reprinting Doc Savage will do, and I'd hate to see somebody do new Doc Savages where we have to update it and modernize it because I think the charm of that stuff is the time period. But certainly, I do see more and more stuff. It's alluding to those, pulp era characters. There's such a charm to those things. The trick is they have to be handled by somebody with a real genuine affection for them, not somebody who's going to parody them or, I don't know.
Yeah, like you said, reboot them.
Because I love that stuff. I ingested that stuff, the Lovecraft stuff and the Robert E. Howard stuff, mm-hmm. I ingested that stuff at the right time where, I was like a sponge. And so all that stuff is in there banging around in the back of my head.
That's great. Did you like Tom Strong, Alan Moore's kind of Doc Savage now? Did you read that?
I didn't. And I don't know exactly what it was about it, but it didn't quite work for me. There was something about it that just, maybe because I knew the material and by then I was already planning to do some of my own kind of stuff with that stuff, that it just didn't work for me.
Okay. How about the horror comics of the 60s and 70s? Were you a Warren reader?
A little bit. I was not a huge Warren guy. for whatever reason, I just kind of wasn't looking when that stuff was coming out. I discovered it late. And most of the guys I'm a big fan of now, they had done stuff in the Warren years when I was missing that stuff with Corbin and Bernie Wrightson and those kind of guys.
Sure.
I wasn't buying Warren when those guys were doing it. I've gone back and picked the stuff up since. But,
okay.
But I was a Marvel Comics guy, and I had a real narrow Marvel comic focus during my, comic book years. So, Mike Plug doing the Monster Comics for Marvel made a huge impression. The old Jack Kirby Monster Comics for Marvel made a huge impression. But, I kind of missed all of what DC was doing. I missed Swamp Thing and all that stuff because,
okay.
Had DC on the cover.
Ironic because I loved your Tales of the Unexpected cover with the Spectre.
Oh, yeah. I owed somebody up at DC for doing me a favor, and so they collected on that one.
Well, that's great. Man. And, it's funny because for a second on DC, two of your past projects, Gotham by Gaslight and Cosmic Odyssey, so many fans really enjoyed those stories. And it sounded like, in the case of Gotham by Gaslight, it's part of the process that led you to Hellboy. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, in a really going back to square one kind of way, I was kind of meandering through the comics business with no direction. Had done Cosmic Odyssey without ever really wanting to do superheroes. That's what comics were doing, and I'd grown up reading Jim Starlin comics. I loved Jim Starlin. I got a chance to work with Jim Starlin.
Yes.
And
that was a great
Cosmic
story.
Odyssey, I got to draw all these DC characters I knew nothing about. And it was my, I finally drew a book about guys that were firing beams out of their eyes and hitting robots. And I just thought, well, okay, I've done it. I don't ever need to do this again. Around that time, this Gotham by Gaslight book came along. And I just thought, it'll be a lot of work, but it's subject matter-wise, it's much closer to the actual subject matter I like. It's harder subject matter to draw. Making up planets and guys blowing up planets and stuff, that stuff's, kind of fun and easy. But drawing books about the real world and especially about, coaches with wheels and horses and I knew it was going to be a big pain in the ass to do. But I knew it would, if I could do it, if I could pull it off, it would, make people view what I do in a different light. So, yeah, it was the first turn into that kind of moody, dark, supernatural kind of stuff. Because before that, I've been doing, superheroes and a book about a science fiction raccoon.
Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nothing horror about that.
Has there been a genre that you've wanted to hit that you haven't yet?
No.
Okay.
When I started Hellboy, I took basically everything I ever liked, everything I wanted to draw, and made it so I could put it all into that book. So, I mean, there's nothing I haven't done. There's something like Screw on Head was kind of different for me.
Okay.
But it's still the same. It's the same. There's a certain visual thing I want to do with the old buildings and strange machines and stuff like that. So at this point, I really feel like I know what I want to do. I know the kind of pictures I want to draw. I know the kind of stories I want to tell. I'm not looking to break any kind of new ground at this point. I just kind of, now that I've figured out kind of what I'm doing, I just want to, do it.
Sure. Horror in comics seems like that's the toughest medium to convey a horrific vibe. I mean, radio is easy with sound. Obviously, film and television, you've got motion and sound and editing and stuff. There are visuals and gothic, scary-looking images in comics, but it always seems to me that is the toughest one to kind of achieve that horrific effect.
Horror in comics.
Yeah, do you think it's tough, or you're a guy that's worked in film as well, and now in animation.
It is a completely different planet. Comics, it's very hard to surprise anybody when the pictures sit there on the page.
Yes.
You can't startle them. The only thing I consciously tried to do, and it's probably started with Gotham, I guess, and kind of went on in a couple other projects, is I tried to adjust my storytelling so that I could create some kind of mood and atmosphere. The Abe Sapien miniseries I'm writing right now, it's a 5-issue miniseries. Probably you could get all the story into 2.5 issues. But I really wanted to try to pull off something that felt spooky and moody and atmospheric. And so I it takes me 5 panels to do something that could be done in 1 panel, but I want to linger and I want to take time and I want to cut away to this and cut away to that to kind of try to create some kind of sense of suspense or, you know, spookiness. Whether that's successful, you know, I don't know. I don't think I've done anything in comics that's scary. If I'm trying to do anything, it's to create a certain kind of mood and atmosphere.
Do the comparisons to Kirby make you happy?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Kirby was such a huge, you know, influence that any comparison to Kirby, I'm very welcome. I welcome that hugely.
Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
Yeah, I met him a couple times. We never spoke. I was on a panel with him once, but I never really got a chance to he didn't know who I was, and I was never in a position where I could show him something and say, gee, Jack, look, I did this. I mean, I wish I could have shown him Hellboy. That would have been great, but I hadn't even started Hellboy. When
you did meet him.
Yeah.
Okay. What about guys like you mentioned Bernie Wrightson? And I'm glad you mentioned him because I'm always fascinated by artists that mention another guy's style.
Well, I mean, Bernie, there were 2 guys in comics that I desperately wanted to be. I started out wanting desperately to be Frank Frazetta and then realized finally that I couldn't, that nobody could. And then I discovered Bernie Wrightson, and then I desperately wanted to be Bernie for a few years. He was a huge influence. Here was a guy who was doing the kind of subject matter I really liked, and there was a mood and an atmosphere to his stuff. I think we come from really different places, even though we kind of both come from Frazetta.
Mm-hmm.
I had that whole, you know, years of Marvel Comics and, you know, Jack Kirby in me that isn't in Bernie. You know, Bernie doesn't have, I imagine he doesn't have Jack Kirby Thor running through the back of his head. I do. So that's going to affect the way I draw a monster comic.
Sure.
But no, Bernie was a huge influence.
That's cool. Have you talked shop with him and, you know, just...
Yeah, I've met Bernie several times. We say hi to each other, but we've never really talked about... I mean, I've told him, gee, I used to want to be you. But I don't think we've gone into it much more than that. One thing that was really interesting to me, a couple years ago at the San Diego convention, a kid came up to me and was talking to me about the Art of Hellboy book, and what a big influence it was on him, and how he copied the book, and he was studying all the stuff in there. And I realized he was talking to me about Art of Hellboy the way I thought of this book, A Look Back, that came out on Bernie, because I copied that thing cover to cover and just studied everything about it, and I read it, and I tried to figure out how he did everything. And it was really nice that here was a young kid that I was having the same kind of effect on that, you know, Bernie had had on me.
That's so great.
That was kind of nice.
You bet. Wow. Has working with Guillermo del Toro influenced your storytelling?
No, because I think it's two completely different mediums.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just been fun. It's been great. The more I see the film business, the more I'm kind of happy I'm not in the film business. But I really enjoy visiting the film business, and unfortunately, it's really not what I do, you know, the film
okay.
thing. But it's certainly a fun process, and it's it's been great to, you know, to work on things and see them get turned into a live action thing and design a set that sort of gets built and stuff like that. You know, it's great. It's not a career that I'm, you know, looking to be in, but if Guillermo calls, I'm certainly happy to run off and, you know, play with him for a while.
So no Frank Miller director's hat in your closet or anything?
No, you know, I've gotten the chance with Guillermo to sit next to him,
mm-hmm.
and whisper in his ear and say, gee, maybe she should say this instead of this, or maybe is there a way you can, you know, shoot from here to there? You know, just I've been able to kind of whisper suggestions. And that's as close to directing as I ever want to get.
Okay.
It's just too much work.
Will there be that same level of involvement then in the second film?
I assume so. At this point, you know, it's very similar to what the way it was in the first picture. I'm doing less actual design stuff and more just real rough concept kind of stuff. And I had more involvement in the story this time. You know, Guillermo and I came up with a plot, you know, together on this. So I'm much more involved in the story end of things on this one.
That's great. You know, the first film, and I'm not just being nice, was such a pleasant surprise. You know, this wasn't a household name character.
No.
And it's so nice that people responded as well as they did. And, you know, everyone really fell in love with the look of it, and I think they really loved, you know, obviously, the acting that Del Toro was able to get out of Ron Perlman. I think
right.
he did a charming job.
Yeah, I've got a 12-year-old daughter, and it's just so interesting that so many of her friends know Hellboy. It's because, yeah, you said, you know, when that first film came out, nobody knew what this thing was. So that's one of the things that's very exciting about going into the second one, the fact that we've broken the ice, that people know who this character is, and you know, that takes a certain amount of pressure off the movie. We don't have this thing hanging over us that says, is this going to work? We know it worked. Now we're kind of freed up to say, okay, we know it works, the skeleton's there, now let's do something more with it. And Guillermo, having just come off of making Pan's Labyrinth, which is, I think, twice as good as anything he's ever done before, I keep telling him, listen, you're making the post-Pan's Labyrinth Hellboy, which means, you know, I expect something amazing. I mean, the first Hellboy was great, but Pan's Labyrinth is so much better, and it is that kind of fantasy world. You know, when I first saw Pan's Labyrinth, it was at the time where it looked like Hellboy 2 wasn't going to happen. And it was heartbreaking because, again, it's so much the same kind of fantasy subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff that reading Hellboy 2, I was going, oh, I don't know how that's going to work. But seeing Pan's Labyrinth, I went, oh, crap, now I see what you could have done with Hellboy 2. So, yeah, very relieved that we got to go ahead to do it. And he just gets better and better. So
now we know that the success of Sin City obviously helped Dark Horse, you know, sell a lot more books and made a lot more money for Frank Miller. Has that same translation happened? Are there more Hellboy readers because of the film? Have you seen a difference?
You know, it's hard to say because with trade paperbacks, you don't really know how many readers you've got. The number of people who buy the regular comic hasn't changed over the years.
Okay.
But the trade paperbacks do constantly sell. You know, we saw it around the first movie. We saw a giant, you know, increase in sales.
Okay.
But that's because, you know, there's the buzz around it.
Right, the awareness was there.
Yeah, so we had this big bump in sales. Then sales kind of went back to, well, that maybe not where they were, but they're in there. You know, it's not going to go away. I no longer have that feeling with Hellboy that I did for years, which is if I do one thing wrong, the whole thing's going to disappear. It seems to me enough of it's out there and enough people like it that I'm going to be able to keep doing this for a while.
I want to ask about that period because on the one hand, when you started Hellboy, this was at the time when creators were breaking away from the big two companies and they were trying their creative own stuff, and it was kind of a good time. Was there like constant stomach aches for you though to turn down that work and really want to say, nah, I think I want to do Hellboy and Dark Horse seems to be the place to do it?
Well, yeah, I had gotten to a point where I looked around, I had just finished an Alien book. I had done an issue of Batman that I was really happy with, and I just thought, do I do another Alien book? Do I, which was fine, and I could do that, and or do I do another Batman book? It seemed to me I was looking around at things, and it was, do I do another one of these, another one of these, or another one of these? Or do I actually stick my neck out and do something that feels like, you know, I've never done it before? I hate repeating myself, and because I was happy with the Alien book and I was happy with the Batman book, I didn't have that thing that was saying, "Oh, you got to do that right." It was like, "No, those are off the list. Now let's try something." But I really figured, you know, I would do the one Hellboy miniseries. It wouldn't sell, and then I would just have to go back to doing some other regular comics work. But I just wanted to be able to do it once, so I'd have something out there that reflected all the kind of stuff I like. You know, the thing you realize after about 10 years of drawing comics, nobody's ever going to read your mind and send you a script that's made out of all the stuff you want to draw. If you've got a list of things you want to draw, you're going to pretty much have to make up that story yourself. So I did it with Hellboy, and the fact that it sold well enough that I could continue doing it, that was nice, but it did take a couple of years for it to sink in that maybe this is working. Maybe I will get to keep doing this.
In Seeds of Destruction, you had John Byrne finishing the plot that you started.
Right.
You've taken over full writing. What parts of writing still challenge you as an artist that has turned into a writer as well?
A lot. I mean, that's one thing that's very nice now, is because my focus is on the writing rather than the art.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's hard to draw a line for me, because so much of my writing is about storytelling. It's not about dialogue as much as it's about going from this image to that image, to cutaway to this image. I mean, that's all in there. That's become kind of Mignola style stuff. You know, cutaway to a statue for a reaction shot, that kind of stuff. That's what I call writing. So it's not describing something as it is picking a number of shots that will convey a certain mood. But I think I've gotten better at it over the years, and as I get better at it and as I have a little bit more control with things, what I enjoy is, like I said before, establishing mood and, you know, cutting from this scene to that scene and stretching out time here and speeding things up here. I mean, to a certain extent, figuring out the stories is fun, but it's the way I'm telling the stories and the way I'm manipulating time and things like that. That's a lot of fun.
Are you providing breakdowns for your artists, or are they more just, you know, descriptive scripts?
It varies. When I worked with Richard Corbin, I didn't give him thumbnails because, you know, he's Richard Corbin. when I'm supposed to work with Craig Russell, I'm not going to give Craig Russell layouts.
Sure.
but most of my stuff, I do provide some kind of thumbnails, because not to say the figure looks like this, you know, this is a small panel. This, I need a close up here. And it's just easier sometimes to draw that than to actually write it. I love writing. I love making stuff up. I hate physically writing it down. So if I can convey this stuff with thumbnails and two or three phone calls, I like working that way. I did thumbnail the first four issues of this Hellboy miniseries that Duncan's drawing, because originally it was being drawn by somebody else who I wasn't as confident in their storytelling.
Okay.
As Duncan does more and more of the Hellboy stuff, I will do fewer of the thumbnails for him, because he knows his stuff backwards and forwards. He doesn't need my help on this stuff. There will always be places, though, where I'll say, for this moment, I need, you know, three panels here, and then a big panel here, and then a panel that's, you know, the color green, and then a little panel that's an eyeball. You know, whatever the fuck it is, it just needs to have that kind of rhythm to it.
Sure. As we wrap up, you know, we've got the animated film coming out on October 28th on Cartoon Network, Sword of Storms. What is the schedule now with your and Duncan's story, the Hellboy story?
I believe we're looking at February. somewhere around February for his first issue.
Okay. And about the Abe Sapien story coming out?
You know, I have no idea when that's coming out.
And I know that Dark Horse are releasing digest versions of the existing trades?
No, there will be, you know, there's going to be a digest-sized comic based on the animated show.
Oh, okay.
That's the only digest thing I know, unless, you know, I wasn't paying attention to one of my emails. We've talked about doing Hellboy in the smaller format, but my line work becomes too thin, and I'm just not that crazy about it. So there's no plan to do a digest-sized Hellboy other than the animated stuff.
Okay. Are we going to see a return to Hellboy Jr.?
I don't believe so. Nobody seems to be clamoring for that, and quite frankly, the fact that, you know, people are still talking to me after that parade of offensive stuff. I really enjoyed that project, but I'm very happy to have done it. We had some of the greatest artists, you know, in comics working on that, Dave Cooper and Hilary Barda and Bill Wright. A wonderful parade of guys worked on that. And I'm very happy to have it be that one book on the shelf.
That's cool. My 14-year-old nephew's favorite Hellboy book.
My daughter keeps, you know, as a little kid. I mean, the thing is, it looks like the thing that makes me uncomfortable about it is it looks like a comic for a little kid. But until you start reading it,
exactly.
You go, whoa, wait a minute. So it's a bizarre thing that, again, I'm happy we did it. But, yeah, I don't see any need to do it again.
I understand. Well, good luck with Hellboy 2, man. Again,
thank you.
You guys did a great job on the first one. Looking forward to the animated films as well.
Great.
And the new series. So I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.
That's Mike Mignola. Don't forget that Hellboy Sword of Storms is premiering Saturday, October 28th, on the Cartoon Network. Check your local listings for showtimes, and if you're not in the U.S., don't worry, the DVD release should come out sometime in February. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. Keep going back to wordballoon.com for updates on upcoming episodes, and if you're a newbie to Word Balloon, check out more of the other creators that we've spoken to and other artists. In addition, there's Word Balloon's presence at MySpace, which is myspace.com/wordballoon. And, of course, we're always there at iTunes, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, all the various podcatchers. If you would like to write a positive review, we'll certainly accept it. And thanks again for checking us out. This is John Suntress. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2006. See you next time.